This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell visited Western Kentucky University this week and sat down with Kevin Willis of member station WKYU. Among other things, they spoke about this week's news that President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin have talked about a face-to-face meeting.
There's nothing wrong with meeting with Vladimir Putin. All of our presidents have done that. I think it is important to remember he's not our friend. He yearns for a return of the Cold War, and within the Russian capacity to prevent, create a Cold War environment, he certainly tried to do that with his taking of Crimea, his invasion of eastern Ukraine, his activities in Syria. Nothing wrong with meeting with Vladimir Putin, but I think a clear-eyed approach is best, and clearly he's not our friend.
Do you think President Trump and the people around him share your perspective that President Putin isn't a friend of America, or do they feel more so that they could negotiate and work with him and that maybe he is a friend in some ways to America?
Well, there's nothing wrong with meeting with Vladimir Putin. Ronald Reagan met with Gorbachev, and so I don't have any problem with meeting. I just think it's important to be clear-eyed about what the Russians are up to, and they're up to no good.
Should President Trump meet face-to-face with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un?
Well, we'll see whether that'll produce a result or not. I'd say that previous administrations of both parties have not been able to stop the inexorable movement toward nuclear capability. It's worth trying something new. Clearly, President Trump has gotten the attention of and the help from the Chinese, which no previous administration has been able to achieve. The Chinese are the principal moving parties here to bring Kim Jong-un to the table. I think it's worth the risk. I wish the president well.
Senator, from your perspective, is the pressure being put on Congress now to pass new gun regulations different following the shootings in Parkland, Florida, and the activism of the Parkland survivors? Is that different? Is what Congress is feeling in terms of public pressure, in your estimation, different than maybe what has happened in the past following other mass shootings?
Well, we have responded. We passed both a enhanced background check and a school safety measure in the omnibus bill that President Trump just signed about a week ago. So we have responded. It's not as much as some would like, more than others would like, but we have taken action on both enhanced background checks and school safety in the last couple of weeks.
Is a nationwide database that would have information on gun owners, is that something you think could possibly ever happen would be a good idea?
Look, I think this is a very controversial subject in this country, very controversial. And a lot of people's views on this depend not so much on what party they belong to, but what part of the country they're from. And there are an awful lot of very strong Second Amendment supporters in the country. That's why it's been very difficult to agree on what types of legislation ought to be passed. I think much of this in the future is likely to be determined at the state level.
You recently announced you wanted to remove hemp from the list of federally controlled substances. Do you think there's enough support in Congress and the White House to actually get that passed?
Well, we're going to find out. I'm going to try to put that in the Farm Bill, which we will have to do this calendar year. We've had a pilot project for the last 4 or 5 years. A number of Kentucky farmers have been in these approved pilot projects. We think we've constructed a way here for this to be done legally and that the bar ought to come down, that it ought to be removed from the Controlled Substances Act. Probably should never have been put in there in the first place.
Again, that was U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell speaking with Kevin Willis of member station WKYU in Bowling Green, Kentucky. The U.S. Bureau of Prisons issued a record of decision, signaling that they are moving ahead with plans to build a federal prison on the site of a former strip mine in the hills of Letcher County, Kentucky. Local opponents of the prison and their national allies say they're considering suing to prevent the construction of a new prison. Benny Becker has this update.
Emily Posner is a civil rights and environmental attorney who's been working with local and national organizations who are against building the proposed prison. Now, she's part of a team of lawyers who are reviewing the newly issued record of decision for a potential legal challenge.
If there are violations of federal statutes, then we will, pull the trigger and file a lawsuit.
The prison has been boosted by Congressman Hal Rogers, who serves on the powerful House Appropriations Committee. His district, Kentucky's 5th, is a mountainous area where immense amounts of coal have been mined. Today, it has an unemployment rate more than double the national and statewide averages. Prison building is one of the main ways Congressman Rogers has tried to bring jobs to the area. This would be the 4th federal prison to be built in his district. Rogers told television station EKB the process is moving forward because of his advocacy for the project.
I got the call from the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. I had met with him and brought this to his attention that it was still waiting the final paperwork. Well, he got on it. Now, this means eventually some several hundred new federal jobs for a region that desperately needs good jobs.
Posner, the lawyer working with groups opposed to the prison, takes issue with the way that Rogers describes the prison. She cites research findings that new prisons tend to have a negative impact on the economies of struggling rural communities.
I think it is disingenuous to be telling his constituents that he's going to be bringing all of these jobs to their community when the social science is something completely different.
Posner is also critical of the argument that the prison needs to be built to address overcrowding.
I've never seen this where the agency, out of one side of its mouth, is saying we need this, and out of the other side of its mouth is saying we don't, under oath in front of Congress.
What Posner is referring to is testimony from U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who explained the Trump administration's decision to remove prison construction from its budget proposal and return the money that had already been allocated. Congressman Rogers rejected the argument.
Given the current volume of inmates and given the projections for the future, the Bureau of Prisons just didn't feel that we needed that facility at this time.
General, the Congress decided this. It's been passed. It's the law. We've got terrific overcrowding. Yes, we've made some reductions in recent years, but not enough. But this has been decided, and we expect it to be carried out.
The new prison was first proposed in 2005, but had been stalled by a lengthy environmental review process. The record of decision clears the way for the Bureau of Prisons to start spending from the nearly $500 million that have been allocated by Congress. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Letcher County, Kentucky.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Flood warning continues on the Ohio River in the mid-Ohio River Valley area. Scattered snow possible in the Potomac Highlands this morning, becoming mostly sunny statewide today with highs in the 40s and 50s. Increasing clouds tonight, a chance of rain or snow in the north with lows in the 30s and low 40s. Chance of rain tonight with highs in the 50s and 60s. A chance of snow on Saturday with highs in the 30s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. Yesterday marked the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. One of the national journalists who covered Dr. King's final speech the day before his death was Ed Rabel, a native of West Virginia. Rabel was a correspondent for CBS News in 1968. He spoke with Roxy Todd about his memories of Dr. King.
He was depressed at that time, I would say, and he was depressed because he had been opposed by forces from both the left and the right in America.
And when he first went to Memphis, that first march that he was on kind of turned into, you know, there was some riots and some violence, and I know he was not happy with the outcome of that first march. Can you talk about that?
Yes, of course. I was covering that first march, and it was indeed intended to be a peaceful, nonviolent protest, which Dr. King had consistently advocated. He was a follower of Gandhi and nonviolence in his protest. And so this march, unfortunately, ended in violence with some of the marchers breaking out windows of the in town, breaking out shop windows and so on, and generally rioting. They were beaten back into their neighborhoods by a rather brutal police force in Memphis. And so consequently, Dr. King vowed to lead a peaceful march. And there's this one scene where I was covering him, and he was standing in the parking lot of the Lorraine Motel where he would later be assassinated. And in that parking lot, a federal marshal approached Dr. King with an injunction in his hand. He handed it to Dr. King, and the injunction stipulator said that they couldn't, that he, King, could not march. There was this injunction which had been sought by the city of Memphis. And Dr. King looked at the, he was, not only was he a formidable and man, but he was also rather mischievous. And he looks at the injunction and very soberly and somberly, and he calls over his aides. He says, Andy, come over here. And Andy Young is, who later would become the United Nations ambassador under President Carter. Andy Young was one of his right-hand persons. And so Young comes over and he says, Ralph, come over here. Ralph Abernathy, he's number two guy. Reverend Orange, come over here. Jesse Jackson in bibbed overhauls. He says, come over here, take a look at this. And so they all looked at it rather seriously, you know, the injunction. And Dr. King said to them, well, you know what we're going to do with this injunction. He said, we're going to give this injunction to our attorneys because we don't have time for such injunction. We got some marching to do. And indeed, they did schedule a march. And I covered the very last speech that Dr. King made at the, I think it was the Mason Temple in Memphis, and there were about 2,000 to 3,000. It was packed. The place was packed. And it was at that final speech that Dr. King gave publicly that he said that he had he feared no man. It was rather prophetic in many ways, almost predicting that something sinister was going to happen to him. He said, I fear no man. He says, I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land. We may not all get there together, but surely we will get together. We will get to the promised land.
And this many years later, 50 years later, as we're observing the anniversary, how do you feel about civil rights here in West Virginia and in the nation? Have we gone backwards? Has Dr. King's dream been realized, or do you feel like we still have a long ways to go?
Well, it's an excellent question, and I have given it an awful lot of thought, and I have written about this very issue. I think that today we still, perhaps even more than in 1968, are afflicted in our country and in our own state of West Virginia with bigotry and hatred and racism as I have never seen it before. I was hopeful when Dr. King was assassinated that he gave his life, I had hoped, to bring about a new day where racism would be on the decline and bigotry and hatred would suddenly be exposed for what the horrible part of what they are, and that he would have given his life so that we might have a better America, which would be more dedicated to and stand up for those things that, as Dr. King said, are put on paper in our Constitution, guaranteeing the rights of all people and that all men are created equal. And those things were things that he stood for. And I felt that perhaps we were on a new road. And I felt that that was so when Barack Obama was elected president of the United States. And I was wrong. And I gave a speech recently at a Methodist church here on Dr. King's birthday talking about this very issue. And Dr. King, as I said earlier in this interview, had said that we have some marching to do. Well, we still have some marching to do in America, and we still have a struggle and a fight for human rights, for civil rights that he stood for. And I personally find it rather depressing that we have not come very far. I thought we would have been better than that, but we are not.
Well, Ed Ravel, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Ed Ravel is a native of West Virginia and a former correspondent for CBS News, and he covered many issues in the American South, including civil rights. He was speaking with Roxy Todd. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.